Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Civilians in Sudan, including scores of internally displaced people and refugees, are scrambling for safety and suffering the disastrous consequences of the violence in the country, UN humanitarians said on Friday. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, said that tens of thousands of refugees from South Sudan, Ethiopia, and Eritrea living in the country have fled the fighting between the army and a rival paramilitary force in the Khartoum area. The newly displaced have found shelter in existing refugee camps further east and south, creating new humanitarian challenges. UNHCR is also particularly concerned about the situation in the Darfur region, where fears are deepening of a revival of intercommunal tensions with 96 people killed in ethnic clashes since Monday. Here's UNHCR's representative in the country, Axel Bishop, speaking from Port Sudan.
The biggest challenge we will have is Darfur. Darfur has already faced a lot of intercommunal conflict and displacement. Now, with this added crisis, the humanitarian situation will be very, very difficult. We also are concerned that the intercommunal violence is going to increase and that we might have some situations which will repeat in relation to what we had a couple of years ago.
Countries in the Americas should suspend forced returns of Haitians on the move and adopt measures to protect them instead, UN-appointed independent rights experts said on Friday. The UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, CERD, sounded the alarm after 36,000 people of Haitian origin were deported during the first 3 months of the year, according to figures from the International Organization for Migration, IOM. Some 90% were deported from the Dominican Republic. The experts expressed concern over collective expulsions, which did not take into consideration individual circumstances and needs. They also highlighted alleged human rights violations and abuses against Haitians on the move along migration routes, at borders, and in detention centers in the Americas region as a result of strict migration control, the militarization of borders, systematic immigration detention policies, and the obstacles to international protection in some countries. In a rare show of unity, the UN Security Council on Thursday called on Taliban leaders to swiftly reverse their decision banning Afghan women from working for the United Nations. The resolution, passed unanimously by the Security Council's 15 members, calls for the full, equal, meaningful, and safe participation of women and girls in Afghanistan. It urges all countries and organizations with influence on the country's rulers to promote an urgent reversal of policies which have in effect erased women from public life. The resolution lays out ambassadors' deep concern over the ban on women working at the UN, saying that, along with other erosions of basic rights, it will negatively and severely impact UN aid operations throughout the country, including the delivery of life-saving assistance and basic services to the most vulnerable. A record 28.3 million people in Afghanistan are in need of assistance this year, making Afghanistan the world's largest aid operation. Dominika Tomaszewska-Mortimer, UN News.
Coming up, following the broadcast of Democracy Now!'s latest headlines.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We're ready to sue over 10 commandments in Texas schools.
And to celebrate the National Day of Reason next week.
Then we talk with Atheist United Executive Director Evan Clark about atheist street pirates.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Biden administration's announced plans to open processing centers across Latin America where asylum seekers would have to request permission to come to the United States, blocking tens of thousands from seeking relief at the U.S.-Mexico border. The first processing centers will be located in Guatemala and Colombia. Migrants from Latin America and the Caribbean will be forced to journey to one of the nearest centers to start an asylum application or ask for refugee refugee status to then be resettled to either the United States, Canada, or Spain. The U.S. has agreed to take in 20,000 refugees over the next two fiscal years, while doubling or tripling the rapid deportations of migrants who are deemed not eligible to enter the United States. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas and Secretary of State Antony Blinken laid out the sweeping measures Thursday, threatening migrants at the southern U.S. border with harsher consequences, including possible criminal charges. This is Mayorkas.
Beginning on May 12, we will place eligible individuals who arrive at our southern border in expedited removal proceedings. Those who arrive at our border and do not have a legal basis to stay will have made the journey, often having suffered horrific trauma and having paid their life savings to the smugglers, only to be quickly removed. They will be removed most often in a matter of days and just a few weeks.
This comes as the United States is preparing to lift the Trump-era Title 42 pandemic policy in May, which for the past 3 years has been used to expel some 2.7 million migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border without due process. Immigrant justice advocates have denounced the Biden administration for violating international law and enforcing policies similar to those pushed by Donald Trump. The new measures exclude migrants from Africa. Eleanor Acer of Human Rights First said in a statement, quote, the Biden administration should focus on measures like increasing refugee resettlement and regular pathways and abandon its plan to impose an asylum ban that would be a legal, moral, and political mistake, end quote. In Sudan, heavy explosions and gunfire continue to ring out across the capital, Khartoum, even after Sudan's army agreed to a 72-hour extension of a humanitarian ceasefire with the rival Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group. There are reports of fighting near Sudan's army headquarters, the presidential palace, and Khartoum's main airport. Residents report severe shortages of flour and other staple foods.
People are not thinking about anything except worrying about themselves, their families, and extended families. The situation now is that the food supplies are dwindling, and citizens will soon face a famine, or at least a crushing food crisis.
Even before fighting erupted between rival factions of Sudan's military government April 15th, a third of Sudan's 46 million people were dependent on humanitarian aid. Back in the United States, attacks on transgender rights continued Thursday as Republican lawmakers in Kansas overrode a veto by Democratic Governor Laura Kelly enacting the most sweeping bathroom law in the nation. The legislation bars trans people from using bathrooms that align with their gender identity in schools, locker rooms, prisons, domestic violence shelters, and rape crisis centers. In Nebraska, Democratic State Senator Megan Hunt is facing a conflict of interest investigation after a right-wing lawmaker complained she did not officially disclose she had a transgender child before voting against a bill banning gender-affirming care for minors. Senator Hunt blasted the probe as harassment. Meanwhile, in Montana, Republican Governor Greg Gianforte's own son, David, who's non-binary, lobbied his dad to reject a series of bills attacking the trans community, including restrictions on health care and banning drag shows. After headlines, we'll be joined by Montana's first and only openly transgender lawmaker, Zoe Zephyr, whom Republicans have barred from the House floor for speaking up for transgender rights. In reproductive rights news, near total abortion bans failed to advance in two conservative-led states Thursday. South Carolina and Nebraska both narrowly defeated draconian anti-choice measures, allowing the procedure to remain legal until 22 weeks of pregnancy. Meanwhile, lawmakers in Vermont passed a bill Thursday further protecting access to abortion, including medication abortion, as well as gender-affirming health care by shielding providers from liability. On Capitol Hill, Senate Republicans filibustered to block ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment, which would codify gender equality in the Constitution. The measure was first introduced a century ago and passed 50 years ago, but has never been ratified, as conservative opponents have argued the deadline for ratification has expired. Ahead of Thursday's vote, women House Democrats marched to the Senate to demand their colleagues pass the ERA. Legal experts believe its ratification would have helped to prevent mounting attacks on LGBTQ communities and reproductive rights. The Senate's voted to roll back emission standards for heavy-duty trucks set by the White House. Conservative West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin joined Republicans in Wednesday's 50-49 vote, setting up a veto by President Biden if the Republican-led House also passes the measure. This comes after environmental groups and some Democrats condemned Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm's endorsement of the Mountain Valley fracked gas pipeline earlier this week. Arizona Congressmember Raul Grijalva said in a statement, quote, "Fully green lighting the pipeline will condemn Appalachian communities to generations of pollution and related health and safety issues while also doing nothing for our ambitious climate goals," he said. Protests demanding urgent action on the climate crisis have ramped up across the United States. On Thursday, a pair of protesters smeared red and black paint on a glass case housing artwork at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., demanding President Biden declare a climate emergency. This follows demonstrations earlier this week outside the offices of banking giants Citibank in New York and Wells Fargo in San Francisco. A new study titled Banking on Climate Chaos finds the world's largest private banks loaned $5.5 trillion to fossil fuel projects since nations signed the Paris Climate Agreement. On Tuesday, climate activists interrupted a talk by John Podesta, who heads the White House Office of Clean Energy Innovation and Implementation. They were demanding the Biden administration reverse its approval of ConocoPhillips' Willow Project in northern Alaska and act swiftly to end the use of fossil fuels.
Going down, you guys. We never needed fossil fuels. Y'all need to stop supporting it. You are going to be complacent to the destruction of Mother Earth and everyone's future.
I appreciate their passion. And we're trying to create a transition that gets to net zero by 2050.
Too late!
They have a point of view.
That is too late!
30 years?
That is too late!
The protest was organized by Climate Defiance, a new organization that's vowed to disrupt the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner in Washington, D.C. this weekend. Former Vice President Mike Pence has appeared before the federal grand jury investigating Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. His testimony Thursday came a day after a federal appeals court rejected an emergency request to quash special counsel Jack Smith's subpoena of Pence by Trump's lawyers, who cited claims of executive privilege. Vice Media is canceling its award-winning show, Vice News Tonight, as part of the company's mass layoff of over 100 workers, including most of its audio team. Vice is the latest media outlet to cut jobs after BuzzFeed last week announced it's shutting down BuzzFeed News. Vice Union said on Twitter, quote, "These workers are suffering the consequences of years of poor decisions they played no part in." And the white woman whose discredited accusations led to the lynching death of black teenager Emmett Till in Mississippi 7 decades ago has died of cancer at the age of 88. It was 1955 when Carolyn Bryant Dunham accused Emmett Till of whistling at her in her store. That prompted Till's abduction, torture, and murder. Dunham's husband and his half-brother were tried for the lynching and acquitted by an all-white jury. In 2007, Dunham confessed she had fabricated her claim, leading the FBI to reopen Till's case. But the Justice Department ended its investigation in 2021 without filing charges. Last year, a team searching for evidence in Emmett Till's case found an unserved warrant charging Dunham in his kidnapping. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio.
We are celebrating our 17th birthday today. Our first show was April 29th, 2006.
Wow, congratulations. It didn't seem like 17 years have gone by already. Time goes fast when you're having fun, I guess. And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And this is the April 27th, 2023 episode of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka is engineering this show in the Stephen Ohl Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which works to keep religion out of government and social policy and to educate the public, and that is you, about the views of those of us who are personally free from religion. And we are over 40,000 members now, and we need to be 50. So if you're not a member, we would love to have your support, because we're in the battle of church and state, bad time in a way in this country for incursions of religion into social policy, including banning abortion, going after LGBTQ, and banning books. So you can go to FFRF.org to join us or to ask for a copy of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and a brochure about our 45 plus years of achievements.
And we really do have a fun show today. In the second half of the show, we're going to talk about atheist pirates. Our guest will be Evan Clark. He's the director of Atheist United in Los Angeles, a group that has many programs to help the community, including a new effort of cleaning the streets of illegally placed religious signs. So far, the atheist street pirates have taken down hundreds of Jesus Saves and Repent and Heaven and Hell signs from telephone poles and other places on public land, doing the city a great service by removing such graffiti from public property.
On FFRF's Ask an Atheist program, it's a Facebook Live show this week. It was actually put on by the FFRF Action Fund, which is the C4 arm that lobbies for state church separation and advocates for the rights of nonbelievers. The show was about the victory for reason, how there was a change on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court that was very significant. FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, was joined by FFRF State Advocacy Specialist Ryan Dudley to talk with Jasmine Nears. She is the Wisconsin State Director of America Votes. That's an organization that FFRF Action Fund joined with in endorsing Judge Janet Protasiewicz for the State Supreme Court in this nationally watched event.
Indeed, the whole nation was watching this election as Protasiewicz won the race by a surprisingly large margin. During the show, Mark and Ryan asked Jasmine Neer to describe what America Votes does.
We focus on electing progressive individuals, so we all kind of come together for that purpose. We are nonpartisan, of course, so if a progressive individual is an individual who believes in, like, voting rights, who believes in abortion rights, believes in the rights that we all care about, but, you know, we come together for that goal, and everyone sits at the table for that singular purpose, and then after the election, they'll go about their business, and they'll do things that really, like, make America work, you know, pushing on issues, talking to the public, getting them to care about the things that they need to care about or know about to be able to, like, keep a robust democracy. And then also we focus on voting rights, because we know that we can do all these good things, talk to all these people, but if you don't have access to the ballot, you know, if there's things that are keeping you from being able to register to vote, it's sort of all for naught. We also get involved in issues legislatively around that, focus on creating this, like, robust multiracial democracy that we really dream of.
So, of course, America Votes is national with chapters in every state. You can watch that Ask an Atheist show on FFRF's YouTube channel. Just look for the Ask an Atheist playlist.
And a new episode airs almost every Wednesday at 12 noon Central on Facebook Live on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the show.
And on our TV show this week, Free Thought Matters, we speak with Bradley Onishi. He was also a guest recently on Free Thought Radio. He's the author of the new book, Preparing for War, The Extremist History of White Christian Nationalism and What Comes Next.
Bradley Onishi is a professor at the University of San Francisco who was once part of the evangelical movement. During the show, we asked him to explain why he thinks white evangelicals are viewing themselves in two contradictory roles.
White evangelicals are really good at thinking of themselves in two roles. One of the roles is founder. We founded the country. We're the ones who built this place. We're responsible for the wonderful experiment that is the United States. But we're also victims. If you try in some way to tell us that the privilege we've experienced for so long needs to be curbed, that we need to extend rights and representation to historically marginalized groups, well, it doesn't feel like, yeah, equality for all actually helps everyone. It feels to them like you're persecuting me. You're somehow attacking me. You're criticizing me. And so the victim narrative and the victim role is really one that they're quick to turn to, and it's very politically effective. The family values discourse, the attacks on school curricula in the guise of parental rights, these are all really defensive tactics saying you're just attacking good old-fashioned Christian Americans. What's wrong with that? Why are you so against God and country?
So if you're not with me, you're against me, as Jesus says in the New Testament. You can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters right now on the Free Thought Matters playlist on FFRF's YouTube channel.
And if you live in one of the major cities where Free Thought Matters is broadcast on local television, you can watch that show every Sunday morning. For stations and times, check ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters, or simply go to our homepage news dropdown and you'll see it there.
So we do have a lot of news, and let's start first with a victory for the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
So based on a complaint from one of our members in Indiana, we heard that the Crawford County Board of Education is regularly opening their public meetings with prayer. We sent them a letter complaining about this, and surprisingly, they wrote back and said, the board president said, this is my first term on the board, my first year as president, and I've also questioned this practice. And she was assured that because it was happening before the gavel, that it was constitutional, but it's not. And so they are going to stop engaging in this unconstitutional practice. So that is a real
victory. And that was a victory for Sammy, is that right?
Well, the press release doesn't say who wrote the letter, but it might have been Sammy. Yeah.
Sammy Lawrence. Well, anyway, whichever attorney, congratulations. Now, we are ready and willing and planning to take on the Texas Ten Commandments edict that is about to pass, it looks like, the Texas legislature requiring every public school classroom to prominently place a copy of the Ten Commandments. We have sent out notices to our members in Texas looking for plaintiffs. If you know somebody with kids in schools there, we are planning a prima facie case. In other words, we don't have to wait for them to go up. It passed the Senate last week, and we expect it to go through the House. It would be nice if we can discourage it. But it's an exceptionally bossy bill. It says you have to put every public elementary and secondary school must display in a, quote, conspicuous place in every classroom, unquote, a durable poster, not just a poster, a durable poster or frame copy of the Ten Commandments, quote, legible to a person with average vision from anywhere in the classroom. It has to be at least 16 by 20 inches. We have an anal retentive bill here. Clearly, no student is meant to escape seeing these Bible commandments every single day of their school for 13 years. So it's supposed to remind Texas of the importance of the Ten Commandments to founding the country. So, of course, there's no Ten Commandments in our documents, our founding documents. We have a secular, godless constitution.
And do you know how many times during the Constitutional Convention the Ten Commandments were mentioned? I'm sure you know.
None.
Zero. It was never a part of the dialogue.
Why would you? And then Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick expressed the most common excuse for saying there should be Ten Commandments before minors, which is that this will make them better Texans. And we issued a press release. You can look on our website. That is it's a very good press release that goes into what's wrong with the Ten Commandments. And first of all, only three have any conceivable relevance to U.S. law, and the first four are religious in nature, ordering you which God to worship, barring graven images, barring taking the Lord's name in vain, and remembering the Sabbath. So what school children need to see this every day?
Or what
And fourth grader needs to be reminded not to commit adultery. Or...
Well, there we go. So, of course, and we have all of these Christian nationalists trying to ban any references to sexuality. And I'd like to see the bill sponsor talk to kindergartners trying to explain what adultery is. I mean, it's absurd.
Or about coveting your neighbor's slaves and wives.
Well, the 10th commandment is sexist, women as property. It is also bizarre that they are endorsing a particular version of the Ten Commandments. It's a Protestant version. It's sort of a made-up version. Doesn't really cohere with some of them in the Bible. So this is exactly what the government is not supposed to do. And finally, we have a firm Supreme Court decision saying this is unconstitutional. But the bill sponsors don't care because they say the Supreme Court has changed and they want to take this before the Supreme Court. Well, game on. FFRF is ready and willing, and we hope it won't pass, but if it does, we will see them in court.
So also in Texas, not only are they putting the Ten Commandments on the schools, on the walls, but one school is actually burying it under the ground of a new building. In Harlan Independent School District, they're dedicating this new building on campus, and they allowed private people to bury a Bible underneath the concrete foundation that is being poured for this archery program.
Well, and when we complained, then they wrote back, oh, well, it was a private group. Well, you don't let people onto school property to take shovels and do whatever they want on your property, and you don't let them post pictures on your official website page. So we are back writing more complaint letters. But this, the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun, Dan. As usual, the Bible is wrong because this is a new complaint for us. It's very bizarre.
There's nothing new under the concrete walkway. That was a Sammy Lawrence letter, by the way.
And then we have a very important complaint in Utah, and that is to uphold a parent who has complained in his school district, Davis School District, I believe, in Utah, which is examining 81 books for censorship. There's a new law in Utah that says sensitive material that includes any kind of sexual references have to be purged, and they have already taken out 33 books, including the Pulitzer Prize-winning Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, which is a very sensitive look at an abused child, a victim of incest, cannot be compared to the Bible. This parent has pointed out that the Bible is obscene. It has all kinds of sexually explicit and graphic portrayals, and if they're going to remove books, they have to remove the Bible. And they have they've been very slow about that complaint, and then Liberty Counsel stepped in this week and said, oh, it would be unconstitutional to remove the Bible. Well, no, it would be unconstitutional to pass a law where you treat religious books differently from other books. And of course, we made clear in our letter to the district, we are against banning books. But you can't treat the Bible differently than other books. And what they should be doing is putting those other books, including the Bluest Eye, back on the shelves pronto, and then lobbying their legislature to overturn this unconstitutional law that is creating so much havoc. And we're seeing this kind of thing around the country.
Well, religious groups like First Liberty are complaining that if you target the Bible, that's a violation of state church separation. It's the government.
Oh, that's a violation of free speech, but you can ban everything else. So we also are... the FFRF Action Fund every week names a secularist or a theocrat of the week. And this week, our secularist, I think everybody would be unanimous, is Zoe Zephyr. And she is the Montana state legislator. She's the first transgender legislator there who has been barred from the floor for speaking out against gender-affirming legislation. And let's hear this clip from her.
When the speaker disallowed me to speak, what he was doing is taking away the voices of the 11,000 Montanans who elected me to speak on their behalf. What my constituents in my community did is came here and said, that is our voice in this body. Let her speak. And when the speaker gaveled down the people demanding that democracy work, demanding that their representative be heard, when he gaveled down, what he was doing is driving a nail in the coffin of democracy.
And speaking of driving a nail in the coffin of democracy, there's a lot of Christian nationalists, and there's so many of them that we have two theocrats of the week. And one of them is Representative Mike Johnson. He is a U.S. representative. I'm not forgetting what state. And he's from Louisiana. And he made these boring but very erroneous remarks on the floor of the House recently, urging the House to observe Faith Month, which is promoted by Concerned Women for America, which was the group that lobbied against ERA. So let's listen to his erroneous remarks.
Even though there is a dangerous trend today to discourage the exercise of our faith in the public square, to rigidly enforce the so-called separation of church and state, the founders of this country would have certainly supported our efforts here today.
The so-called separation of church and state.
And the other went to a judge in Mississippi. And then, Dan, we quickly want people who are listening to urge your representative to support Jamie Raskin and Representative Jared Huffman in their resolution for a National Day of Reason next week instead of a National Day of Prayer. It's the same day as the National Day of Prayer. We have an action alert up on our website, FFRF Action Fund, where you can, it's automated, you can use it and get, let your voice be heard on this.
So the National Day of Reason / Prayer will be on Thursday, May the 4th.
Yep.
So we're going to take a break. We're going to hear a really fun song in just a couple of minutes. And then after that, we're going to talk with an atheist street pirate, Evan Clark. You'll find that very entertaining. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. As we noted earlier, book banning's a bad idea. But if school libraries, public school libraries, are going to be hunting down books to ban them because they're obscene or have religious content, then they have to include the Bible. Let's listen to a classic song about the Bible, It Ain't Necessarily So, from Porgy and Bess, written by George and Ira Gershwin. The Gershwins, by the way, were not religious. I think that's pretty obvious from the lyrics. Here's Sammy Davis Jr. singing, It Ain't Necessarily So.
It ain't necessarily so. It ain't necessarily so. Little David was small, but oh my.
Little David was small, but oh my.
He fought big Goliath, who lay down and died. Little David was small, but oh my. Found in a stream.
Little Moses was found in a stream.
He floated on water till old Pharaoh's daughter, she fished him, she says, from that stream.
Scattywa.
Scattywa. devil's a villain, but it ain't necessarily so. To get into heaven, don't snap for a seven, live clean, don't have no faults. Oh, I take that gospel whenever it's possible, but with a grain of salt. Methuselah lived 900 years.
Methuselah lived 900 years.
But who caught that living? We know God will give him to one man what's 900 years. I'm preaching this sermon to show it ain't necessary, ain't necessary, ain't necessary, ain't necessary, ain't
That's Sammy Davis,
yes,
Jr.
It's a very classic.
Singing the Gershwin song, It Ain't Necessarily So. So we just have a few seconds here to mention a really bizarre story showing the silliness of religion. This is a story actually by a Catholic, the Union of Catholic Asian News. A Jesuit high school student in the Philippines triggered outrage among the Catholics because he posted a review of the Holy Eucharist on social media. A student at Ateneo de Manila Senior High School, he posted a picture of the sacred host, which he must have obtained when he went to Mass, and then he tweeted like a food review of the host, saying, it's designed as a 6 out of 10. I like the vibes. The crispness was 8 out of 10. It's not soggy. It has a satisfying crunch. The taste is 7.5. It tastes like cornflakes. The wow factor was 7 out of 10. Anyway, he went on with this.
I'd call him, that would be a rather nice review for a dry cracker.
So the sacrilegious act committed by the student created a huge outrage. They even had to cancel Mass, and the bishop suspended the Mass until after we do, and this is a real thing, the rite of reparation for the profanation of the Holy Eucharist.
And didn't they kick the student out?
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, the student was kicked out of the school.
Of course, his real crime was that
thing.
He took the wafer out of the church, right?
Yeah, and desecrated this holy
Ridiculous.
Thing.
Ridiculous.
So anyway, we're going to have some more fun after the break. We're going to talk with Evan Clark, who is an atheist street pirate.
Well, I want to hear all about that.
We'll be back in just a few minutes.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Dan, you were in L.A. last Sunday where you attended an atheist street pirate party. What was that all about?
An atheist street pirate party. It was a lot of fun, but let's let our guest on today's show explain it. Evan Clark. Evan Clark is the executive director of Atheist United in Los Angeles. And actually, we spoke with Evan on this show 12 years ago. It was back in 2011 when he was a student. He was the first openly atheist to be elected student body president at California Lutheran University. And he's been busy in the last 12 years. He has been the chair of the Secular Student Alliance Board of Directors. He was co-host of the Humanist Experience podcast, co-founder of the Humanist Community of Ventura County. And in 2019, Evan Clark was hired as the first executive director of Atheist United.
And Atheist United has been a thriving atheist community for 40 years there in Southern California. Has many outreach programs, food distribution, highway cleanup, student scholarships, protests, letter writing. In fact, we took a lawsuit with AU when they refused a student scholarship and we got it taken. Tabling, lobbying, advocating for the separation of state and church. AU's most recent effort is called Atheist Street Pirates. So, Evan Clark, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
And we have a first, we believe. You are parked at Hollywood Forever Cemetery. So I think this is the first time we've had someone in a cemetery as our guest, but fortunately alive.
It feels like a good setting for a call with y'all.
Yeah, you were just telling us what an interesting cemetery it is and full of a lot of famous names, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've got, I think Burt Reynolds isn't far from where I am. I saw Johnny Ramone when I was driving in. Judy Garland, a lot of famous faces here.
And Toto also, right?
Toto too. So before we talk about the Atheist Street Pirates, could you remind us how you got elected student body president as an atheist at Catherine Lutheran University?
Yeah. California Lutheran University is a small little liberal arts school in Southern California, probably about 2,000 to 3,000 students. And this was, we're going back in time a bit, but in 2010, I was in an election for student body president. I ran against a former roommate, actually, at the time. It was quite fun. That was the most controversial part about it, come to find out. But I got elected as the first openly atheist student body president. I'd run the secular student group on that campus for 3 years before that. And it went well. It's funny how quickly a campus can adapt. We went from being this new group that people didn't really understand to within 3 years being celebrated as part of the diversity of the university. And I think led to an era of interfaith work that the university now is very proud of.
I remember you told us that you were surprised that you would be considered an example of diversity on a college campus.
Yeah. truly. It is interesting, but, we have a lot of private religious universities around the world in the United States. You know, the Catholics and Lutherans, they have these long, long traditions of higher education. I think people forget how recent public education is in the history of humankind. And so a lot of these religious schools, these private religious schools, they've been thriving and they continue to thrive in our society. But they still get a diverse group of students, religiously diverse, racially diverse, economically diverse. And that's what's interesting is what type of communities they're going to build, how they find their identity while they're there. You know, like people don't deny a scholarship to Notre Dame just because they're not Catholic. And similarly, California Lutheran University now is more non-religious students than religious students, like most universities.
Well, they need, I mean, even if maybe they were giving you a scholarship, but a lot of these religious institutions realize they have to have non-Catholics or people of other religions in order to prosper. And of course, that's one of the driving forces, unfortunately, behind the voucher schemes to rob our public schools. But higher education, absolutely, that's a totally different situation.
Exactly. And I find, you know, that the more these schools interact with international students, the more they just want to have anything more than their specific religion on campus. I mean, recent studies have shown that up to 1 in 2, like half of all students on college campuses these days do not identify as religious. So the changes that are happening are so rapid and so intense. And, I think the smart universities, even the religious universities, are starting to embrace that. You know, they don't always have to love it, but they recognize that this is a new reality. And one of the best ways to do that is to work with organizations like the Secular Student Alliance. Let students create a space for themselves. Let them interact with your religious institutions in more formal and organized ways.
Well, you've been on the front lines of this change, almost forever, even after school. And now you're the executive director, the first hired executive director of Atheist United. And I have to tell you, you might know this, but Atheist United was the very first public speaking event I gave after I left the ministry after 19 years of preaching. They invited me over to L.A. I think the group was only about 2 or 3 years old. It was 1984. And I still...
Yeah, 1982, we were founded.
So it's just 2 years old, yeah. So it's a soft spot in my heart to think about all of that, what's happening since then.
Go ahead. We know that you're from L.A. It's always nice when you come through and swing by. You've sung with our choir. I know you've been a regular speaker. The group's older than I am, but its history is so prolific. When it was founded in 1982, it broke off from American Atheist, and I think it had ambitions to be a national organization. And we had some really, really amazing leaders at the time, but it never quite left L.A. And it built its own little community, and it worked with organizations like Atheist Alliance International as that took off. But it's been a really interesting organization that has balanced national advocacy, a city the size of Los Angeles. It's always kind of been a larger group. And today, since I was hired, we've been trying to figure out how do you build community for the modern American in a big pluralistic city? You know, we have a lot of people these days who grow up in a secular household or, work at Netflix and no one around them is religious. And defining community for them in an atheist context is very different than 1982, when most people joining the group have to hide their identity and feel like all conversations about religion are a contentious battle, which it still is in many parts of our country. But, we have to find new ways to discuss community, and we have to figure out what people's human needs are. Just beyond that tension for many of our members.
Well, I noticed last weekend when I was at your Atheist Street Pirate Party, which was really a lot of fun, and we'll talk about that in a second. I noticed you're doing something right. You've got a thriving group. They're excited. And there's young people there. There's young families. And it's not just us, the old atheists, sitting around talking philosophy. So are we going to take a break?
No, we have time to talk about the Atheist Street Pirates that we promised to talk about. What on earth is that?
Sure. Atheist Street Pirates is a program we launched 2 years ago, and it was inspired by Christmas Day, actually. I went to get Chinese food, like all good atheists do, on Christmas Day during the pandemic in 2020, and I was in Hollywood at the time, and I remember walking up, waiting to pick up my delivery, and outside on a palm tree, there was this sign, this paper sign that said, repent or hell. And I looked at it, and I was so annoyed by it. And I was like, I bet nobody ever takes that down. So I went, I took it down, I folded it up, threw it in the trash. And then I realized they were targeting Jewish and atheist people on Christmas. And I got really angry about it. I really recognized how this was an anti-Semitic and anti-atheist kind of sign. And I think most of us, we've driven down a highway that's had some overpass with some Jesus sign on it or some... you need to be safe from hell or, ask Jesus for mercy type sign before. And you don't think much of it. You go, that's really annoying. I hope the city cleans that up. And what we realized is the city doesn't actually clean them up a lot of the time. They'll sit there for months and months before anything's done about them. And so a few of us decided we're going to get together. We're going to start mapping these. We're going to see how big this phenomenon is. And so we put a map on our website, and we started quickly adding dozens of signs to it. And then a few of us decided, what if we took some down? What if we helped the city clean this up and, got a sense of how big this problem was and how long those signs are? And fast forward 2 years, I've got 50 volunteers in 8 states, and we've tracked over 1,000 signs across the country and taken down probably about 300.
So when you where are you taking them down from? Telephone poles or,
Exactly. So these are all public land. We take a classic stance on the separation of church and state, which is our secular, our land, public lands need to stay secular. If we were a different group, we might put up our own atheist signs and get into a religious arms race over this. But we've decided you know, the laws are well written to stay open to all. And our highway overpasses, our telephone poles, the fences around your courthouse, those are all public land. Those are paid for by taxpayers, and no religion should be privileged in those spaces. So the laws in pretty much every city in the United States make it illegal for you to leave a sign on public land. You can go stand there until you're blue in the face holding a sign, but the second you leave it behind, you're breaking city code or separation of church and state law, and you are now just leaving trash behind.
Wow.
So we consider it kind of an extension of our trash cleanup.
Wow. So we're going to take a break right now, Evan, but afterwards I want to talk about the party that happened last week, the Atheist Street Pirate Party. And you can describe, there were hundreds of signs there, and I took pictures of a lot of them. And there's also some artwork that was displayed about those signs. So we're talking with Evan Clark. He's the new, well, 2 years ago, first elected executive director of Atheists United. When we come back, we'll talk more about atheist street piracy. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And as I told you before, last week I was in Los Angeles and I attended the Atheist Street Pirate Party put on by Atheists United, a thriving group of atheists who are involved in many different projects. And we're continuing our conversation today with the newly hired, well, 2 years ago, executive director of Atheists United, Evan Clark. So, Evan, that was a fun party. There was a Jesus person and a pirate music, and everybody was having a good time. Can you describe some of the signs that you had signs plastered all over the walls?
And we should explain for someone just tuning in, these are religious graffiti that have been removed from public places. That's what atheist pirates do.
Yeah,
exactly. We take down that illegal religious propaganda that's on your highway overpasses, your telephone poles, your public lands. And we've been cleaning that up for about 2 years now. And so here in Los Angeles, with all the volunteers we have, we've been able to take down over 200, 250 signs in the past 2 years. And so what we did is we started collecting a lot of those, and my office is actually just overflowing with them. And we came up with the idea of, you know, what if we threw them on some white walls, did like a mock art gallery night, and invited some reporters and artists and tried to show our membership and the public how serious this issue is. I don't think you can truly grasp how many signs they are and how disgusting and insidious some of them are and how aggressive they are until you actually get to see them all next to each other. And so that's what we did. We rented a space. We put up about 150 signs, and we had about 12 different displays that talked about a few stories related to them. Some of the signs varied from Jesus, the Way, the Truth, 14:6. We had, there's probably about 100 of those that we've collected alone in LA. It's a mass printed corrugated plastic sign of multiple sizes, usually found on telephone poles. We had banners. There's like 8-foot banners that say, trust Jesus. Or the Bible is true, or Jesus saves. We have my favorites are Jesus is coming, are you ready? And the R and U are just letters.
Yeah.
It's all like a stencil format, often on recycled metals or recycled plastics. But because of the sexual innuendo, our pirates love getting those.
I don't get it.
And then we've got, one of the signs we found more recently, because he just dipped into California, is a guy named Brent Farley, who's a street preacher, and he actually travels the country just to put up signs. He's got this yellow sign with black text that says Jesus Saves on it in this kind of almost Star Trek style font. And it's famous for being at the insurrection. If you remember a lot of the news on January 6th, and they would zoom in on these signs that say Jesus Saves, it's his sign that he designs and he puts around the country. And we've started following him on social media, and we've actually tracked over 600 signs that he's put up individually around the United States.
So can we go take them down?
Yeah, yeah. So we've been able to find and put on our map about 300 of them. And so if you go to atheistunited.org/streetpirates and scroll down, we actually have an interactive Google map right now. And you can zoom into your state. So if you live in like a North Carolina or Ohio or Texas, for instance, you can find these signs right now that are actively hanging, and you can go look for them and take them down. But please report to us so we know, we get some updates. And occasionally we write local city, actually most of the time we write local officials to ask them to take it down. But again, some of these can stay up for years. We had a sign recently we found in Hollywood that was up for 6 years before we took it down.
What's the website?
So our website is atheistunited.org/streetpirates.
Street Pirates. Wow.
Street Pirates, yeah. And once you go there, well, we have this interactive map. We've built it into Google's Maps. And what's cool is anytime we find a sign, we also go onto Google Street View, and we go look at images taken by those street view cars, and we can now tell you how long some of those signs have been up. We're able to get a little bit of historical record on that bridge or that telephone pole. And that's how we know that some of these signs have been up for 3 years or 4 years, or in the Hollywood instance, 6 years.
So some
without any intervention.
Some of the signs are really way up high. And at the party, I saw you guys were doing something with a, you called it a crucifixer. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, so we've started to make some joke names for some of the tools we use to take these signs down. And if you've ever seen an extending metal pole, it's, you know, similar to a kind of a pool cleaning pole, but one that extends out. And they often can go from kind of when you buy them about 6 feet long to about 20, 25 feet when they're fully extended. And some of the signs, we think they're using poles like these to put them up. And so we've started to buy these poles in order to knock the signs down. And we've decided to call ours the crucifixer.
Huh. That's funny. And some of the signs in Spanish too, I noticed that you around the LA area. And then
a few. Go ahead.
And then there was a sign that said something about that Jesus saves, accept it, but accept was spelled E-X-C-E-P-T. Accept it.
Yeah. Those are my favorite. Those are often the handmade ones. So that one was a recycled white banner that they decided to spray paint. I believe the full text was Jesus is King, and then accept it with EX. They clearly needed a proofreader. It reminded me of all the, you know, misspelled comments on Facebook.
So and then I got to meet Jesus at the party. I asked him, I have a question for you, Jesus. Who was your real dad? he couldn't answer. He said, I don't know. That was fun.
Yeah, so we threw this art gallery party, and our community, you know, most atheist communities around the country, they use speaker events as their big gathering point. And there's nothing wrong with that, and those often can be incredibly big events. But since the pandemic, we've found that people just aren't turning out the same for speaker events. Whether it be fear and safety, or whether that be just they're not as energized to drive across a town like LA to go to a speaker, we made a conscious effort to start throwing parties. So we've been doing these quarterly parties and trying to get 100 people to show up and make them the biggest atheist networking events in the city. And for Street Pirate Party, really, we went for this kind of fun, joyous space. We had a Jesus impersonator handing out red wine. We had a local artist come take some of our signs and convert them into art pieces. So Lori Couvier, she came and she had these beautiful pieces where she took about 20 of our signs and added these Jesus emoji cutouts of wood and other materials. And it was kind of how how she thought Jesus would respond to seeing some of these signs. And so some of them had Jesus with, you know, peace signs in his eyes or money signs in his eyes or puking emoji face.
Yeah, or crying, I saw those.
Or crying, yeah.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, it led to this just really fun environment where we had free drinks and food and everyone could kind of hang out, get to know each other, get a sense of how big this problem is, join the Atheist Street Pirates, but, you know, just kind of gather and commune and have a fun space to be secular and pride yourself on supporting separation of church and state in such a fun way.
So just about a half a minute left, Evan. Have you been successful when you write cities or counties around the country about this graffiti on public places? Have any of them ever responded and said, thank you, we'll take it down?
Yes. So we have had quite a few instances where the city is just waiting for people like us to write. So it depends on your city, but in LA we have a 311 system that we've been using. We've also done that in a few cities in Texas where we write them and we ask them to go check it out, take it down. And usually within a few months, they're able to get to the signs. In other instances, we find there's a bit of hot potato between the different government agencies. And, you know, Water and Power says, oh, it's not our duty to take down signs. And they send you over to, you know, the highway people. And the highway people are like, ah, I don't know, we're short-staffed and we're focusing on all these, you know, we buy houses signs. And so I do find that their intention is to take them down. The city officials are generally on our side, but they haven't quite, they don't have the manpower and energy sometimes.
Thank you, Evan Clark. Sorry we're all out of time. This has been a fun show. Evan Clark is the executive director of Atheist United, atheistunited.org. Thank you, Evan, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And we want to thank listeners in Philadelphia to WOOM, in Bryn Mawr to WZML, in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU, in Janesville, Wisconsin to WADR, College Station, Texas, KEOS, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, Bellows Falls, Vermont, WOOL, Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU, Ithaca, New York, WRFI, and of course, greetings to all you podcast listeners. Give us a thumbs up on your provider. Tell your friends and your family to find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And the podcast We Dissent, featuring female secular attorneys, has just dropped its monthly We Dissent, and it's on court reform, so you can get that at any place you get podcasts. Please not only tune in next week, but help us and join the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us.
Welcome to Free Thought Matters. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. We are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which brings you this weekly talk show.
Today we're going to be talking about the right to abortion, the fallout from the Dobbs decision, with author, atheist, and Nation columnist, Katha Pollitt.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation, which produces Free Thought Matters, is the nation's largest association of free thinkers. That's atheists, agnostics, and other non-believers. We invite you to join us in our vital work to keep our secular government free from religious influence. Become a member at ffrf.org or ask for a complimentary copy of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. Freedom depends on free thinkers. Watch prior episodes of Free Thought Matters on FFRF's YouTube channel.
Today's guest is one of our favorite commentators, Katha Pollitt. Katha's been writing the award-winning column, Subject to Debate, for The Nation magazine since 1995. She's author of many books, including Reasonable Creatures, Learning to Drive, and most relevant to today's interview, Pro, Reclaiming Abortion Rights. Besides being a feminist, Katha Pollitt is an atheist who has done much to move society forward and has therefore received FFRF's Forward Award.
Every year, Katha comes up with a December gift-giving guide naming nonprofits. And in December 2022, she included the Freedom From Religion Foundation on that list. And we just want to brag a little bit by repeating what Katha wrote. She wrote, "With 6 out of 9 Supreme Court justices being right-wing Christians, there's no time like the present to stand up for the separation of church and state. The FFRF fights the good fight with lawsuits and public campaigns and, okay, some jokes and snark, too. Full disclosure, I'm on the honorary board. Join us." So, Katha, thank you so much for that plug, and welcome back to Free Thought Matters.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we've not talked to you since the Supreme Court handed down that disastrous Dobbs decision last June, overturning the constitutional right to abortion. So we want to talk about that, but first, you were just on Comedy Central's Daily Show with the guest host, Wanda Sykes. Let's look at a quick clip of what got you some big rounds of applause from that live audience.
Dobbs, which overthrew Roe, has woken up pro-choicers in the most and women who maybe didn't know they were pro-choice mm-hmm. in the most amazing way. It was very important in the last election, in several races.
Mm-hmm. And abortion rights won in those elections.
Yes, yeah. It did. And,
so we're going to join in that applause, Katha. I just want to ask you, is that very nerve-wracking to go on national live TV?
Yes, it was. They did make it incredibly painless. I mean, Wanda Sykes is such a goddess, and she was so friendly and calm, and I knew pretty much what they were going to ask, so that all made a difference.
And you had a supportive audience.
I had a supportive audience, and I let them do my hair and makeup however they wanted.
And you have a supportive audience now. So you wrote a book in 2014 called Pro about abortion, warning that although most Americans are pro-choice, they needed to shed their complacency and get active. And boy, were you ever right. So I noticed on the Daily Show interview that you speculate that some of the public officials who may have voted anti-abortion might really now have thought that Roe couldn't have been overturned. They might have second thoughts. Do you think there were politicians who were simply posturing?
Oh, sure. I think a lot of politicians don't care one way or the other about abortion or many other things that they have to pretend to really care about. So, sure. And I think that when Roe was there, it was safe to vote for to vote in the legislature for all kinds of anti-choice things because you knew they wouldn't actually be upheld. It was just a vote to say, hey, anti-choice people, I'm on your side. But now those votes really matter. And so I think that we might see that some people back off. On the other hand, we might not see that because the stakes have just been raised higher, but the sides haven't changed, really. So as state legislatures get more and more worked up about this, some state legislatures, we may see that just more and more crazy laws get passed.
Well, regardless of their ideology, they have to know that society is on our side on this. They see the polls. They see how people are showing up to vote. So maybe some of them will be having politically some second thoughts.
Talking about crazy laws, Republicans, and this is at the federal level, want to create a federal anti-abortion website that would direct women to crisis pregnancy centers and would also collect their personal information and would give those that information to anti-abortion groups. This is called the Standing with Moms Act. So I don't know how far it'll get. The Republicans do control the House now, but then there is the Senate.
And
so
Biden's veto.
And Biden's veto. But still, that kind of shows you that a lot of Republicans are they're prepared to push. And then, okay, here's one. And I should say I get my information from Jessica Valenti, who has a website called Abortion Every Day. And every day she updates it and she sends out an email, if you subscribe, which I do. And it's very, very comprehensive. And I learn something every day, usually something I'd rather not, I wish wasn't happening. So in Arkansas, get this, the Republicans want to pass a new bill that would allow women to be prosecuted for, quote, the death of an unborn child. I'm virtually quoting from Jessica here. She should get all the credit. They're not just trying to criminalize abortion, which is already illegal in the state, but any, quote, death that is, quote, caused by a wrongful act, death, or neglect or default. So that means if you have a miscarriage, you could be arrested if the state determines you did something to cause your pregnancy to end. So what does that mean? I mean, women are already being arrested, and some are in jail, for using illegal drugs during pregnancy that results in a loss of the pregnancy. When they specify an accidental miscarriage, which they do, that means they're suggesting there are miscarriages that aren't accidental, and this would enshrine the idea that it's murder to cause a miscarriage or stillbirth. Well, we don't want that. I mean, that would mean – I mean, that's like what they have in El Salvador. You know, if you have a miscarriage and they think you've had an abortion, there are women in prison for decades for that.
I mean, aren't the statistics that almost half of all pregnancies end in miscarriage before you even know you're pregnant kind of thing? I mean, it's common. Am I wrong?
Miscarriage is, I think it's somewhere between 15 and 20%. But the point is that this just opens the door to saying, oh, you caused your miscarriage, so we're going to arrest you. But the cause of most miscarriages is not known in the first place. And, you know, what if you do, you know, if you have a glass of wine and you have a miscarriage? I mean, it doesn't have to even be scientifically accurate. It's what they think is accurate. And we know they think that taking birth control is a chemical abortion. They think the IUD causes abortion. They have very much their own facts. And this is just another way for them to put more of their non-fact facts into the law.
Based on religious ideology, usually.
So, like woman is incubator and
totally woman. Yeah,
anything that goes wrong in the pregnancy is her fault.
Yeah. Right.
But if they want to stand with moms, if they pull the moms of this country, they're standing on the wrong side of this issue, aren't they?
They are. They are. And, you know, you do wonder sometimes what you said earlier, which is how do they think they are going to win when the majority of the country is not, I mean, they're not wild about abortion, but they're not in favor of banning it. And, you know, we saw in the last election, there were 6 states that had the opportunity to pass anti-abortion laws and did not. And some of those states, like Kentucky and Kansas, are quite red.
So when we learned way back when the Supreme Court decided to accept the Dobbs ruling, you wrote something. You wrote, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, the future will be worse than the past. Now that more than 6 months have passed since that decision, do you stand by that prediction?
Oh, totally. Totally. When abortion was illegal before Roe, there was a lot of tacit acceptance of it. And there was a lot of not going after abortion providers. I mean, we hear about the cases where it happened, but in a lot of cases it didn't. And abortion practitioners practiced, I wouldn't say quite openly, but it was known. And now, for a variety of reasons, that won't be the case. The anti-choice movement is much more energized than it was when abortion was already illegal. And they have really put doctors on notice. And they have put women on notice, too. And I think that the fact that we now have all kinds of electronic methods of gathering information makes a difference, too. You know, if if you have a pregnancy of menstruation app on your phone, there's the possibility that that information is being collected and will end up with some anti-choice person who will know when you have your period and when you don't have your period. I mean, it's a very scary thought.
Katha, I know you remember the days before Roe versus Wade, as do I, and I was 17 when it was handed down, and it was such a magnificent decision and a moment in time. What's your perspective, having lived through the era when it was illegal, then legal, and now we're right back at square one in terms of abortion as a federal right?
Well, I have to say, I was 24 when Roe came down, and I was not really tuned into this whole issue at that time, so I don't have, you know, personal memories to report. My mother had an illegal abortion, unbeknownst to me, and many of her friends did. I remember my mother gave $500 to various friends who needed abortions, and that was when $500 was, you know, a lot more money than it is today. I think that abortion was very much a fact in the lives of ordinary women. I mean, and that's one thing that the anti-choice people try to obscure. But abortion was very much part of American life all along. And it still is, and it still will be.
So we are talking with Katha Pollitt about abortion rights. She's an abortion rights advocate, author, the Nation columnist. And when we return, Katha, we would like to ask you about two things, the religious war behind abortion rights and what you call the so-called pro-life movement and how it couldn't care less about the living.
We'll be right back with more Free Thought Matters.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist.
When I first recorded that commercial back in 2014, being openly atheist in America was still fairly uncommon. Today, the fastest growing religious group in the country is the non-religious, especially among the young. That progress is heartening, but the religious pushback is fierce and the forces of Christian nationalism are well organized. Our progress won't continue unless we work together so that reason and our secular constitution will prevail. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics working to keep state and church separate, just like our founders intended. Please, join the Freedom From Religion Foundation today. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
My name's Dustin, and I'm an out-of-the-closet atheist. I've only been an atheist for 3 or 4 years. I started being an atheist, I guess you could say, after a long period of existential angst that I felt in college. I don't know if I actually felt it. It could have just been more that I thought the brooding made me sexy and interesting, but I don't think that's actually the case. No, I'm actually an atheist because I've never actually heard a good argument for God, for his existence, or any God's existence. If I were to say there are unicorns in the world, you would go, okay, furnish the proof. So I put the same challenge out to theists out there, furnish the proof. I'm open, but I just haven't heard anything good yet.
So welcome back to Free Thought Matters. We're continuing our conversation with our favorite columnist, Katha Pollitt of The Nation. So Katha, you were talking about what abortion rights were like before Roe and after, and you wanted to add something else about the patchwork nature of this whole process?
Yeah, when abortion was illegal, there were still states toward the end where abortion was legal, New York State, Hawaii, and there were states where it was semi-legal. And then Roe made it legal throughout the country. And I think we're returning to that patchwork state nature where if you can get to a pro-choice state, you can have an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't, you're stuck. Now, an interesting thing is that some of the red states are trying to pass laws that you can't leave to have an abortion, which is completely contrary to your constitutional right to travel freely. I mean, everybody can leave Texas except pregnant women, it would be.
Right. It's like the Fugitive Slave Act all over again.
It really, and you know, with the Supreme Court being the way it is now, you can't automatically say, oh, that will never happen.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what's going to happen. I do want to say, though, that some of the blue states are increasing their support for abortion rights. Most recently, Minnesota passed a law that protects all reproductive rights from local bans. You know, in some states, localities are trying to pass anti-abortion or anti-whatever bans, and this will make that not legal in the state of Minnesota. So that's really great.
So, Katha, you and we have been talking for decades about how this so-called pro-life anti-abortion movement is really a religious crusade, and yet it seems like people don't want to talk about that. Even a lot of liberals don't want to admit that this is a religious war that's going on. What do you think about that?
Not every anti-abortion person is an evangelical Protestant or a conservative Catholic, but the energy and the money to make an organized political movement at the grassroots level definitely comes from those places. That's where, you know, if you're in a town and you go to one of those churches and being anti-abortion is part of it. And I think that if you added up all the non-religious people that are against abortion, it would not be enough to make an impression on politics.
Well, 90% of atheists support Roe versus Wade, and 98% of the members of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, almost 99%, strongly support Roe.
Who are those other 2%?
Huh. Yeah, well, maybe they misunderstood.
Have them on the show.
But isn't this also a question of legislating dogma, this religious concept of when life begins?
Well, yeah, and you know, it's not every religion either. For example, Judaism says the you become a human being with rights when you take your first breath. And that doesn't mean that every Jewish person says, you can have one of those day-before-birth abortions that people talk about that never happen. But it does mean that there's always room for health and other considerations. And, you know, there are very, very conservative Jewish rabbis that will say, no, in this circumstance, you should be able to have an abortion. In that circumstance, yes. And organized Judaism is very pro-choice.
So we do see kind of the Christian nationalist movement using the issue of abortion or behind the issue of abortion.
All these causes are coming together. That's the very interesting thing, that Christian nationalism, as you call it, that it's anti-abortion, it's very suspicious of public education and universities, taking books out of the school library, all that kind of stuff, anti-gay, anti-trans. It's all part of the same mentality, and it's a very siloed thing. So that is a very disturbing fact about politics in our time.
Yeah, scary. Now, you did a column, I think, after the Dobbs decision, in which you said very forthrightly, pro-life, the pro-life movement couldn't care less about the living. And so you muster a lot of facts and arguments about that. Can you share some of that?
The pro-life movement or the anti-choice movement, we mustn't call it pro-life.
Exactly.
The anti-choice movement often talks in a, you know, the joke is your life begins at conception and ends at birth.
Right.
They're concerned with it. And, you know, I think that now they're talking about, now we have to help mothers and children. But at the same time, they're allied firmly with the Republican Party, which is totally against doing the things that would help mothers and children. So you have in one state, Indiana, I think it is, they're talking about cutting food stamps so that you can't have white rice, you can't have all kinds of perfectly normal foods. They're just trying to make life hellish for poor people. And I think as long as the anti-choice movement is allied with those politics, it's all going to be about, well, we'll do a little charity here, we'll do a little charity there. And it's always about helping the mother and the baby. You know, it's never about helping the mother and the 10-year-old, but, you know, kids aren't babies for very long. And the older they get, the more expensive and, you know, they are. So I think that I will believe their commitment to helping mothers and children when I see them fighting for things that really help women and children.
So just to change the subject slightly, Katha, I know we've talked about overpopulation with you in the past, and you're really one of the very few columnists out there calling attention to overpopulation and the role it's playing in climate change and just generally making all problems worse. So we've hit 7.8 million and growing. I am curious.
Billion.
And I'm curious what your reaction is to all this recent reporting about China's declining population as if it's a catastrophe.
I don't think it is a catastrophe. I think it requires some economic reworking. I mean, if you have a system where people rely on their children to support them in their old age and suddenly there are fewer children and those children are in the workforce, et cetera, then you have to think of another way to do it. But I think basically people should have the number of children they want to have. And what you see in countries where the birth rate is falling is often let's bludgeon and badger women into having children. Let's make them get married. You know, this never works. And it's never sort of like, well, what do women need to have the children they want to have? Because there are people who want to have more children than they can afford or they can support well. And you'd think governments would be saying, well, how can we make things easier? How can we make things easier for parents? One thing that just happened in China, I heard on the radio, is that they're now saying that single mothers can get various government benefits from which they were barred before. So, I mean, that's something. That's nice.
But in all of this, aren't women and their uteruses sort of being treated like a commodity? I mean, first China bans more than one child. Now it wants women to have three.
Yeah, I know. No, it completely is. And, you know, in South Korea, which has one of the lowest birth rates, if not the lowest birth rate in the world, it's way less than replacement. It's a very, very sexist society that where an overt anti-feminist just won the leadership and is abolishing all kinds of government things that were there to help women. So that's not going to work. And you have women there who subscribe to the four no's. Get this. No dating, no marriage, no children, and there's one other. I don't know what it is. There are a lot of them. Everything is no, no, no. And you think how desperate women must be to have some measure of self-control and how angry they are that they will say, you know, we're not even going to date. You know, forget it, man. We're through with you.
Well, isn't it true that if there's a government that can tell women you can't have an abortion, that same government can tell them you can't have children? I mean, it can flip.
You mean that you must have children?
Can ban you from having children.
It can do either, and we saw that in China.
Yeah.
As you said, first it's you can only have one child, and then now it's we really want you to have three.
Well, thank you, Katha Paulett, for your thoughts on abortion rights and on population. And on making this world, not some supernatural world, a better place.
And any final words of encouragement?
Well, I just want to say, I think, you know, Freedom From Religion Foundation does such a great job. And I think we all need to keep our eye on the ball here. I mean, there's so many issues that come up, and it's easy to become distracted. And it's also easy to become discouraged. So I think we have to think about when we win, which we have done some of, and try to make that happen more often. More Minnesotas.
Yes.
More New Yorks.
More New Yorks, yes. Well,
yes.
Thank you, Kasa Pollitt, for being there and for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for watching Free Thought Matters.
Because free thought matters.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.